Welcome, everybody, to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get to it. Today, we're going to start off very much like we've started the past couple, it feels like, and that is with an NFL trade. So we've seen another quarterback now be traded from his team. So the quarterback carousel, as you might call it, continues in the NFL. So this week, first, let's go back 2 weeks ago where we saw Matthew Stafford going to the Rams and Jared Goff then going to the Lions. So obviously that kind of kicked it off, and I'm sure there's more to come, maybe not necessarily through trade outside of Deshaun Watson, but we'll probably see a lot of moves in free agency in the coming weeks and month or two, I guess. And then as we get into the draft, we'll see more movement, I'm sure. So the details of this trade, Carson Wentz goes to the Indianapolis Colts. So the Colts get their starter to replace the retiring Philip Rivers. Obviously choosing not to go with Jacoby Brissett, unless they do have him compete for the starting job. My guess would be that they won't. My guess would be that Carson Wentz starts for the Colts next season. But in return, the Eagles get a third-round pick this season, 2021 draft, and a second-round draft pick in the next season, in the 2022 NFL draft. Now, that second-round pick next year could become a first-round pick in two conditions. One condition is that Wentz plays 75% of the snaps for the season, or if he plays 70% and the Colts make the playoffs. So that draft pick would become a first-round pick at that point. Now, let's talk a little bit more about this trade before we compare these trades. There's a lot of conversation obviously happening in comparison with these two quarterbacks being number one and number two in the same draft. But Carson Wentz had a very mediocre record with the Eagles. So his record was 35, 32, and one tie. That is not not the record of an elite quarterback. Now, obviously, you know, we can go back to the 2017 season where he led the Eagles to an 11-2 record to start off before getting injured, being out with the ACL injury. And then we know the story there. Nick Foles comes in to replace him and leads the team to winning the Super Bowl. So over Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, might I add there. Once he came back from that injury, we saw a different Carson Wentz. So we no longer saw that same quarterback that led them to an 11-2 record. We didn't see that first round draft pick quarterback that many expected to see. And I know injuries have different effects on people. You know, some come back and thrive, some come back and they're definitely not the same. So there's a lot that goes into that. But Carson Wentz clearly was not the same quarterback. You know, he had the ACL injury, and then he had the concussion. He ended up leading last season in the stats that you don't want to lead in, being interceptions, sacks, and fumbles. So a lot of struggle there for Carson Wentz, and now he finds himself getting traded. Going over to comparisons now. So in this trade, the Eagles get a third-round pick and then a future second, potentially first-round pick. Now, if we compare that to the Jared Goff trade, and you can look at this either way. You can look at this from the Lions' perspective or you can look at this from the Rams' perspective. For the moment, we're going to look at this at the Lions' perspective. Okay, so the Colts get Carson Wentz, and that's all they get. They give up two not huge draft picks. Now the first round pick they might lose next season, that's somewhat significant. But obviously they're expecting Carson Wentz to perform and get back to those standards that he has proven in the past before injury. So they're not too stressed out about that first round pick because they're not expecting to draft high that season anyway. Now, obviously you don't want to have to give up high draft picks, but that's not a big concern. They'll be able to get what they need in a later round pick if everything goes as they are planning. Now, the Lions get Jared Goff, but also get a first round pick this year, a third round pick this year, and then a first round pick in the next two drafts. So if we want to talk about winners and losers in a combination of these two trades, the winner is clearly the Detroit Lions. Now, yeah, the Rams get Matthew Stafford, who they still see value in, and bringing him to a better system where he has better protection. They're expecting good things from him. But in terms of draft capital, age, and all of that, the Lions clearly won these two drafts. There's still a lot of questions for the Rams. The Rams are going to have to, in the next couple of seasons, draft a quarterback. Or they're going to keep signing quarterbacks. One of the two things are going to happen. But now they've given up the first round picks in their next two drafts. So they're expecting Stafford, from what I can look at, what I can see, if I'm looking at this the way that they're looking at this, it looks like they're expecting Stafford to be their starter through at least the 2023 season. Because they don't have a first-round pick. Unless they make more trades, they don't have first-round picks all the way up through until 2024. So there's a lot of questions there. For the Lions, not a ton of questions, in all honesty. You have added the draft capital you need to put the supporting cast around Jared Goff. Obviously, you need to address your offensive line. You need to address your wide receivers. You need to address probably a little bit more on your defense because you need guys that are going to be able to challenge Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, whoever replaces Trubisky in Chicago. You know, you're going to need those defensive players. And on the flip side of that, you're going to need the offensive line to protect Jared Goff from Khalil Mack and others that are going to be obviously coming after him and pressuring him the same way they pressured Matthew Stafford. So the Lions obviously got the better end of both of those combined trades. Now, the question in Indy is, what do you do? You didn't really give up a ton of draft capital, nor did you give up any starting players. So you're realistically for this year, you're kind of in the same boat you were before, except now you don't have to worry about drafting a quarterback. So the stress of maybe trading up to get a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance or a Mac Jones, that stress is gone now because you've traded for Carson Wentz. So now you can use those draft picks. You don't have to draft up and give up more either draft picks or more players. And you can take the supporting players that you need. And whatever it is, now I don't know Indy's depth chart enough. I know they have a decent offensive line, but I don't know enough about the rest of their depth chart to tell you exactly what they need to spend that draft capital on. But in my opinion, it looks like the Colts are now sitting in a good spot post Phillip Rivers. The Eagles now have a question to answer. Do they hand the keys over to Jalen Hurts fully or not? You know, obviously trading Carson Wentz, the expectation from fans would be that Jalen Hurts is going to get the starting role. But the Eagles do still have several options here. They received a little bit of extra draft capital, an extra third round this year, a potential first round next year. Do they let him start for 1 year, kind of gauge how this year goes for him, and then see what they need to do? or they currently sit at the number six draft pick. Do they use that or even trade up to select a Fields, a Wilson, a Trey Lance, a Mac Jones to challenge Jalen Hurts? It would be kind of interesting to see Mac Jones get drafted there and compete with Jalen Hurts again, as they did both. They both were at Alabama at one point before Hurts went to Oklahoma. But do they use their number six or trade up to get one of those quarterbacks to challenge him? Or do they get, or is this kind of the feel out year for Jalen Hurts? You know, he started last year when he was put in as starter last year, he started hot. He started good. We saw a lot of good things out of him. You know, the Eagles were in the middle of seeing Wentz fumble and get intercepted and sacked and not really be able to move the ball. Hurts comes in and he kind of gives them new life, gives them an energy they didn't have, but quickly got figured out. He cooled down over the rest of the season, ended up finishing only a 52% completion rate, 6 touchdowns to 4 interceptions, rushed for 354 yards and 3 additional touchdowns. That, to me, is not enough to say Jalen Hurts is the guy. The Eagles, obviously, are going to be in a rebuild mode, in my opinion. They're not an established team, obviously. They have the number 6 overall draft pick. They're not an established team. They're in a rebuild mode anyway. I don't know. I can't give you the correct answer here. They're not. I can tell you what they shouldn't do. They should not go out and sign a quarterback in free agency. They don't have the salary cap room to do that because of the dead cap hit they're taking from Carson Wentz. So you could do one of two things. You could go out and sign a veteran to back up Hurts just in case there's an injury or anything like that, and let Hurts kind of show his stuff this year. Gauge it. See if he really is your guy in Philly. If he's your quarterback of the future, that would be a one suggestion. And honestly, I would probably, I could see it going either way. I really could. This is a hard decision. I do not envy the Philadelphia Eagles executives having to make this decision. Because me as a, I'm not even a fan of this team, but looking from the outside in and trying to make this decision just to make the decision, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you, because the thing is, and I'll have to look this up and maybe I can talk about this on the next episode. What does the quarterback class look like next season? We know what the quarterback class this year looks like, but I don't know that you're going to top this quarterback class next season. And so with that being said, again, with no background information on what next year's QB class looks like, you're sitting at the number 6 overall pick. I would not trade up. I can tell you that much. That is not something I would do. If I was the Eagles, I would not trade up. You already are at number 6. Obviously, Lawrence is going to go number 1. Either Fields or Wilson are going to go number 2. The other one will go number 4. And number 5 is the Bengals. They're not taking a quarterback. So you would have your choice of Trey Lance or Mac Jones, unless one of those other two quarterbacks, Fields or Wilson, falls. You would have a choice of Trey Lance or Mac Jones. If I'm the Eagles, I'm drafting one of those quarterbacks. I think that is going to be the decision I would make if I was in that situation. You know, I want to pull this up now. This is because I'm going to think about this for the next week, and it's going to irritate me. The next season's quarterback class. I want to know, who are we looking at here? So let's look at I'm going to look at Walter Football. And if you guys don't know this website, now I am not affiliated with them in any way, but dating back 10 years, walterfootball.com is the website I typically use for my draft, my mock drafts. I like them. He does a good job with this. What in the world am I looking at right now? Okay, so I gotta find where it's at, because they've got. Hold on, let me go to the mock draft. I'm gonna go back to their main page, but yeah, check out, you know, unofficial plug. You know, again, I'm not sponsored by them, but walterfootball.com. Check them out if you want mock drafts, whether it's this year, next year. I think they do a year out. Honestly, that's the main thing I use this site for. I don't really expand much upon past that. But as soon as this gets up and loading for me, we will look at this and dive into this. But I'm curious, what would it be worth waiting a year? Because you have that extra first round pick next year now. Okay, so the top quarterbacks they have next season, and I'm going to butcher these names, but Tyler Shough from Oregon is number one. And actually, they don't have another quarterback projected to come off the board in the top 10. Number 12 from USC, Keaton Slovis. So your top two quarterbacks are from the Pac-12, or from Oregon, Shough, and from USC, Slovis. So yeah, that right there makes up my decision. If I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I'm using the number 6 pick this season to take either Mac Jones or Trey Lance. That's going to be your best bet as the Eagles. Yeah, that would be what I would do. If I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I draft a quarterback at 6, let him compete with Hurts. Maybe not a serious threat to start this season, but at least show Hurts that, hey, you do have competition. You know, we're not completely handing you the reins, but you have the reins. Give him this season and give him as much of this season as you can. The one thing I can't stand teams doing is when they give a young QB the reins for a season. They say, you know, you're going to have it for this season. And then halfway through the season, if he's struggling, they say, nope, you're benched. And I've seen, it seems like they do that more now than they did in the past. And maybe it's because we have such an unstable quarterback carousel in the league, unstable quarterback lineup in the league. But look at Washington, you know, Dwayne Haskins. Now, Dwayne Haskins had his problems, had his issues. Even coming from my Buckeyes, I thought he was drafted too high. Does he have character problems? Yes, he does. He does. But taking a quarterback out, benching him, putting someone else in, and then taking that quarterback and benching him, putting the other one back in, that does way too much to somebody's psyche. If I'm a young quarterback, that's messing with my mind. That shows me they don't trust me enough to let me have it. So they can't do that to Jalen Hurts here. They have to, if they want to test him out this season and see how he's going to do, give him the whole season to do it. Now, if you get 3/4 of the way through the season and he has, you know, 2 touchdowns to 20 interceptions, you know, obviously that's outlandish. That's a big difference. But if that's the case, then okay, yeah, we got to do something there to compete. Because again, you're not drafting, you're not going into the 2022 draft looking for a quarterback, at least not right now. Now, will somebody jump up in the draft next year? Absolutely. Somebody is going to challenge that Oregon quarterback and Slovis from USC. But at this moment right now, you need to draft that quarterback this year. One more thing about this trade that I found kind of interesting is that first round drafted quarterbacks do not have a strong history since 2009. With Stafford and Goff and now Wentz all being traded, every first round quarterback that was drafted since 2009 all the way up through, I think, 2015 to 2016. So from 2009 to 2016, every single quarterback drafted in the first round is no longer playing for the team that selected them. Interesting to note that Goff and Wentz both lasted the same amount of time with their teams as Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. The only difference is that Goff and Wentz both led their teams to the Super Bowl. All right, let's run through this list real quick. We'll take a quick break. And actually, we're going to run through this list. I want to give one note on college football. We'll take a break, come back, and talk college basketball. And some Major League Baseball. So let's look at this list. So Matthew Stafford, obviously, drafted with Lions, went to the Rams. Let me go through the list of who's retired. Again, this is just in the last 12 years. Mark Sanchez, drafted with the Jets. Josh Freeman with the Buccaneers. Sam Bradford with the Rams. Tim Tebow with the Broncos. Jake Locker with the Titans. Christian Ponder with the Vikings. Andrew Luck with the Colts. Brandon Whedon with the Browns. EJ Manuel with the Bills. Johnny Manziel with the Browns. Those are all retired players now. All right, let's look at everybody else. Cam Newton from the Panthers, now with the Patriots. Probably going to be changing again. Blaine Gabbert with the Jaguars is now with the Buccaneers. RG3 was with Washington. He's now a free agent. Most recently with Baltimore. Ryan Tannehill from the Dolphins to the Titans. Had kind of a resurgence there that led to Mariota moving. Blake Bortles from the Jaguars to the Rams. Teddy Bridgewater, the Vikings to the Saints to the Panthers. Jameis Winston from the Buccaneers to the Saints. Marcus Mariota from the Titans to the Raiders. Jared Goff, obviously, for Rams to Lions. Wentz from the Eagles to the Colts. And Paxton Lynch from the Broncos is now a free agent. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's 22 quarterbacks in 12 seasons that were drafted in the first round that are not with their original teams. Now, some additional notes on this. Past 2016, so from 2017 to present, we had Patrick Mahomes in 17. Obviously, he's not going anywhere. But the Bears are probably getting rid of Mitchell Trubisky. And Deshaun Watson most likely moving on from Houston. 2018, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, they all look to be secure where they're at. But Josh Rosen didn't last with his team. Sam Darnold most likely is going to be out at the Jets. 2019, Kyler Murray, he's good. Daniel Jones, iffy. Iffy at best. Dwayne Haskins, obviously we already know he's already gone. He's a free agent. And then last season, Burrow, Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, all have great promise. It's too early to tell. And then Jordan Love is a big mystery with Green Bay. And then again, this year we have 5 quarterbacks projected to go first round. Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Mac Jones. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming years with those guys. All right, real quick over to college football. It's something I talked about in the first episode, but when we talked about the release of the Big Ten schedule, I discussed a little bit the Nebraska-Illinois game that was going to be played in Ireland. I said it then, and I stick to that thought that that game does not make sense to me in Ireland. I could see Notre Dame playing in Ireland. That makes sense to me. honestly, Notre Dame, in my opinion, should have a game in Ireland every year. And so I found the name to this game today, and it's called the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. It's at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. All right. Now, if I'm college football, I'm sending Notre Dame there every year. It makes sense to me. I don't know. If you have a different thought, let me know. Check out my Instagram page. Leave me a message, comment, something, and let me know your thoughts on this. But I think Notre Dame should have a game every year at in Ireland, and then send another team over there to challenge them. But I talked about how Nebraska, Illinois had a scheduled game in Ireland this year. That game, I'm pretty sure I said it then, there's time for this to change. There was already concerns about the pandemic, and it has come to fruition. So that game is no longer being played in Ireland because of the coronavirus pandemic. The game now being played in Champaign, Illinois. It will be a home game for Illinois. This comes after a decision between the two governments. So college football, the Irish government, medical experts, the administrative staffs at the two schools, they all got together and decided, okay, this is not going to be the best idea. Game organizers hoping that those two can play in the future. Again, I say break it up. Send them both over there, but send them in different years to play Notre Dame. I think that would be interesting. That would be neat. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. All right. Well, I'm going to take a break real quick, and I will be back with the second half of this podcast. We will discuss Fernando Tatis, obviously a mega deal there, and what that means for the San Diego Padres. We'll talk about who's next in terms of big extensions in baseball. And we'll talk March Madness. All right, so stick with me. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we are back, and we are going to continue right where we left off. So we are going to jump into Major League Baseball and talk about this gigantic contract extension that was just signed this week. So Fernando Tatis Jr., shortstop for the San Diego Padres, signs a 14-year, $340 million contract. That is the third largest contract in Major League Baseball history, behind only Mookie Betts, who just signed with the Dodgers, and Mike Trout, who's number one with the Angels. So West Coast teams, California teams, they're out there paying their players. So obviously they got the revenue to do it. I won't get into that too much, but the market out there allows them to have more money to spend on their players. So the Padres now with two players that have contracts over $300 million, being obviously Tatis Jr. at shortstop and third baseman Manny Machado. So the left side of their infield is set long-term. Both are great players. I would like to see more from Machado, but I think both are great players. Both will help lead the Padres to the playoffs, and will be able to, I think they will be able to challenge the Dodgers year in and year out. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So obviously you could see with the Padres, what they've done this year, they have gone heavy on getting players to be able to challenge. They want to replace, obviously, the Dodgers at the top of their division and in the top of baseball. Obviously the Dodgers are not going to go away anytime soon. They're not done. They're not folding just because the Padres signed this huge extension. But let's look at the San Diego Padres and what they have done this year. I mean, obviously Machado was signed long term already, so they were good there. But they've gone out, and now they've obviously signed their young player, Tatis, to a high extension. They're bringing in relief pitchers. They're bringing in starting pitchers. I mean, there's a whole list of players they just re-signed. They just brought in Jerks and Profar on a 3-year contract. So they're doing, you know, they're bringing in players to help them compete. And that's good. We as a baseball fan, that's good. I want to see more competition. I don't want it to be the same teams every year, year in, year out. That gets boring. It really does. And that's one thing I could say about Major League Baseball outside of these last couple of years where it's been Dodgers and Astros. There's a decent variety. You know, we've seen the Astros, we've seen the Dodgers, we've seen the Red Sox. Let's see, just in the National League, we've seen the Dodgers, we've seen the Giants. The Rockies had a year in there where they made the World Series. We had the Cardinals, the Cubs. We had Milwaukee had a strong run. The Nationals. So over a half of the National League has made it to the World Series somewhat recently. The Dodgers starting pitchers, they brought Yu Darvish in. They have Blake Snell, Chris Paddock, Joe Musgrave. On top of some closers, they have Drew Pomeranz, Mark Melancone. They have Austin Nola at catcher, Eric Hosmer, Machado and Tatis. Profar out in left, Will Myers out in right. Tommy Pham, they still have. So, I mean, they've got a good roster. I would like to see them. I don't know a lot about Trent Grisham in center field, but I would like to see maybe one more outfielder step up. And Profar might step up for them. Grisham might step up for them. But I would like to see one more player step up. We know Hosmer and Nola are going to perform. We know Machado and Tatis are going to perform. We know Will Myers should, for the most part, perform, along with Tommy Pham, if and when he plays. So they've got a good... And I would like to see a third starting pitcher step up. So Darvish and Snell, both outstanding. I would like to see either Lamet or Paddock or even Musgrave step up. So Tatis, being 22 years old, signs a 14-year deal. That gives him till his 35-year-old season that he'll be signed with them. So the question that comes up next is, who's next? Who is the next young player that's going to sign a large contract extension? And the top two players that come into mind are Juan Soto and Cody Bellinger. So Max Scherzer coming to the end of his deal means that there's going to be more money available. When Bryce Harper left, that created more capital for them to be able to spend. So they're going to be able to wrap Soto up for long term. Trey Turner is another one with the Nationals that's going to be signed to a long term. Now he won't get the same kind of contract Juan Soto gets, but he'll still get a pretty sizable contract. Cody Bellinger is another one. You know, Corey Seager comes off the books after this season. So either this season or next season. And so with that, they need to wrap up Cody Bellinger long term. I was just looking up Ronald Acuna Jr. I was curious what his contract was. So he signed a 8-year, $100 million contract with Atlanta back in 2019. So he's already signed long-term. They won't push to do an extension with him for the next several years. So we'll see what happens with that. Probably, let's see, if he signed 8 years back in 2019, so he signed through 2027. So probably around 2024, I could see them gearing up to sign him to a long-term extension. He is 23 years old. So in 3 years, he'll be 26. That's still a year earlier than both Trout and Mookie Betts signed their long-term highest contracts. So Trout and Betts were both 27 when they played, when they received their contract extensions. So it's not out of the question that Acuña will get a large $300-plus million contract, probably around 2024, 2025. But as far as who's next, I would say Juan Soto and Cody Bellinger would and should be the next two. So pitchers and catchers have officially reported. We are literally right on the brink of Major League Baseball starting. So I am obviously very happy. I'm ready. They came out today, I think, or in the past couple of days, saying it looks like there will be the opportunity for fans to attend games, obviously not at full capacity. But you better believe if I have the opportunity, I am going to a Major League Baseball game this year. It's going to happen. I'm going to go see my Reds play. I've got to. It's been too long. I miss it. I miss the atmosphere. Again, same things I've said in weeks past, but I'm excited for baseball to start. If I had the means and the opportunity, I would travel to Arizona to see the Reds play spring training. That is something that is on my bucket list to do. Obviously won't be this season, but hopefully sometime in the near future, I'll get that opportunity to travel out there and see it. But excited for the start of the season, excited for fantasy baseball. And, you know, in future episodes, I will talk about fantasy baseball. I'll talk about fantasy football. But for the most part, we're going to keep it to news. We're going to keep it to breaking news, trades, signings. You know, we'll do game recaps. Obviously, 162 games for Major League Baseball, I'm not going to break down and not analyze every game. That's not going to happen. But big games, I will try to break down. So, obviously, I talked a little bit about the Super Bowl last week. You know, we'll talk about March Madness when it comes up. NBA Finals, probably talk a little bit about that. Major League Baseball, we'll talk big games. We'll talk playoffs for sure, but we'll talk big games and trade deadlines, things like that. So, with that, let's transition to, I can say the final topic. We'll broaden it by saying the final topic of college basketball. Obviously, there are several things I want to talk about regarding college basketball today. So the list for the Wooden Award has come out, being the 20. So they've trimmed it from 25 to 20 players. Obviously, they have a long way to go to get it narrowed down to who could possibly be it. So this week, the update included adding Hunter Dickinson, star freshman with that state up north. And, yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. So I don't know a lot about these players. There are some players I know about, but a lot of them I do not. So looking through this list of 20, I'm not going to name all 20. Go on to ESPN or CBS Sports or whatever sports website you watch. You can check out the full list. But names I recognize. Obviously, Hunter Dickinson. Luca Garza, you know, he was runner-up last year, I believe, with Iowa. 6'11", senior, and he's a center. He's the favorite this season to win it. Quentin Grimes, you know, came from Kansas, transferred to Houston, has them in the top five. I could see him being a legitimate contender. Ron Harper Jr. with Rutgers. The Big Ten putting out players this season, guys. Trace Jackson Davis from Indiana. There's a guy from Illinois on here. I'll leave it at that because I can't pronounce that. There's actually two guys from Illinois. There's a Minnesota player on here. I am a little sad there are no Buckeyes on here. But I don't know. But there's three Gonzaga players on here. Over half of Gonzaga's starting lineup is on this list. And there's not a single Buckeye. Come on, guys. But that has brought up questions of who's missing from the list. And you say, who's missing? It's a list of 20 players. There's only going to be one player that wins. But even with that, there are some people that are thought to be missing from this list. One of which is Virginia's Jay Huff. That is probably one of the bigger surprises. Now, his most recent game against Florida State was abysmal. I will say that word, abysmal, in terms of a Wooden Award player. 4 points, 2 rebounds. With that, in my opinion, open and shut case, he's off the list. He's not making it. Sorry. You can't, in my opinion, you should not be up for a Wooden Award. You're the top player in college basketball if you're putting up 4.2 rebound games. There needs to be a consistency. The other player listed on here is Nashawn Highland from VCU. 19.3 points per game, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, 39% from the three-point arc. I would include him on that list. And then there's a couple other players that are listed on here I don't know enough about. I think a list of 20 is fine. I don't think you really need more than that. But that brought up a good question for me. And that question is, what is the history of the Wooden Award? And what I mean by that is the players that have won the Wooden Award, how have they fared in the NBA? And so I put up the list of every player that's won the Wooden Award. And it dates back to 1976. Now, obviously, I'm not going to go that far back. I wasn't even alive in 1976, so I can't really speak to that. I don't want to discuss something I don't know something about or enough about. But looking through this list most recently, it's hard to tell. You can't really take the last two because it's too early. Obi Toppin or Obi, I still have not figured out how to pronounce his name, but Obi Toppin from Dayton, it's too early to tell. Zion Williamson, everyone considers him a superstar. It's still too early to tell. But before that, Jalen Brunson, it's been 3 seasons. Jalen Brunson, where is he at? Frank Mason III, where is he at? Buddy Hield, he's done a little bit. I've heard a little bit of his name. Frank Kaminsky has not become a star NBA player. Doug McDermott, Trey Burke. So that means we go all the way back to 2011-2012 with Anthony Davis. Obviously, we know he is a star. Before him, you got Jimmer Fredette, Evan Turner, and then you got Blake Griffin. Before that, Tyler Hansbrough, then you have Kevin Durant. So the list of players that win the Wooden Award more often than not go on to be busts, or at least maybe not busts, but they're not significant. They're not top tier players. Now, for those wondering, Jalen Brunson was drafted by the Dallas Mavericks at number 33. So you're telling me the top player in college basketball was taken 33rd overall. Okay. Since then, he's kind of been in and out of the lineup, but has not really done much of significance. And he's actually been out with surgery on his labrum, on his right shoulder. So not really a ton there to go on. In his 2 seasons, he's played 130 games, averages 20 minutes a game, averaging 8 points per game, 3 assists, 2 rebounds. Nothing really to write home about. Frank Mason III, he was drafted to the Kings with the 34th overall pick. Played in the Summer League, where he actually played decently. In his career. So he's already played for 3 different teams, Sacramento, Milwaukee, and Orlando. In his career, he's averaged 15 minutes a game, 103 games, most with Sacramento. So since he left Sacramento, he's only played 13 games. averages 6 points per game, 2 assists, 2 rebounds. So again, definitely nothing to write home about there. So one thing I might do in the future that just kind of came to me was I would like to compare college basketball Wooden Award winners going to the NBA and college football Heisman Trophy winners going to the NFL. Or even the Maxwell Award, because that's the Player of the Year Award. I mean, everyone, when we all think of college football, we think of the Heisman. But technically, the Maxwell Award is the Player of the Year Award. But I would like to look at the Player of the Years in college sports, football and basketball each year, and what they did, what they ended up doing in the pros. Now, obviously, you have, again, we talked about, you know, we had Anthony Davis, Zion Williamson even, Blake Griffin, Kevin Durant, you know, MJ, Tim Duncan. Those guys won the Wooden Award. But more often than not, they turn out to be insignificant players in the NBA. So I would be curious to see that combination. All right, let's transition over to March Madness. We are ever so close to conference tournaments. For big sports fans, obviously, we have been waiting for this day. You know, we went last season without it. And so we're excited. We're ready. But the conference tournaments start in 2 weeks. March 3rd is the first one with the Ohio Valley Conference. And then, you know, you go through all the way through the conferences until you get to the Big Ten, starting on March 10th, going through the 13th. Or I'm sorry, going through the 14th, with the 14th being the selection show. So we are ever so close, 2 weeks away from conference tournaments, which means we are a month away, roughly, from March Madness starting. So last week I talked about the brackets. I talked about bracketology. I talked about the different brackets. So the 68 team, the 48 team, and the 16 team. This week we're only going to talk about 68 team. It looks more and more like that's going to be what they go with, barring some unforeseen situation where something crazy happens. It looks like we're going to have a full tournament this year. So the last four teams in this week: Maryland, Minnesota, St. Bonaventure, Stanford. The first four teams out: Connecticut, Colorado State, St. Louis, Utah State. So no significant team really in those lists. Obviously Stanford somewhat big, Maryland somewhat big, but nothing too crazy. Changes this week: I don't want to sit here and go through all the teams because for the most part, you know, it's not going to waver that much. But your one seed still Gonzaga, Baylor, Ohio State, Michigan. That doesn't change. But your big changes: Houston drops to a 3 seed. So your 2 seeds, Iowa moves up to a 2 seed. So that's the big difference there. Knocks Houston down. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Outside of that, the 4 line changed with Florida State moving up to a 4, Creighton moving down to a 5. And then Kansas moving up to a 5, and Missouri moving down to a 6. So no real significant changes. New teams this week: Wichita State actually is the only new team that broke into the 68 team bracket this week. So no real big changes. The 1 seeds stay the same. Only 1 2-seed changed. That gives the Big Ten with 4 teams in the top 2 seeds. So 4 out of the top 8 being Ohio State, Michigan, Illinois, and Iowa. And then I don't believe we have any 3 seeds. No, we don't have any 3 seeds. So the next team in the Big Ten would be, I believe, Purdue. No, I'm sorry, Wisconsin at a 5 seed. And then Purdue at a 6 seed. And I'm not going to go any further past that, But yeah, so that's 6 teams. 6 teams in the top six seeds that are six seeds or higher, four of which are two seeds or better. So they don't have the breakdown this week by conference. I would like to see that. That would be interesting to see. But we are getting closer and closer to March Madness. So again, we'll, as we get closer, as we actually get to conference tournaments, we'll talk about any upsets that happen. You know, it happens every year. There's an unknown team that really outshines everybody in conference tournaments. There's lower seeds that upset the higher seeds. You know, you got four and five seeds winning their conference. You got teams that go all the way from day one all the way to the championship. So it'll be interesting to discuss and talk about that stuff. And then as we get the brackets, we'll talk about predictions and picks and all of that. So exciting time for sports fans. I can say that. I think March is probably one of the best months for a football fan. Or I'm sorry, for a sports fan, not a football fan. A sports fan. You have spring training starting for Major League Baseball. You have March Madness. You have the NBA starting to wrap up. So obviously we have the All-Star game coming up March 7th. In terms of football, you're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. College football, you got spring games starting. So March is a very – March, April, that time frame is a very – big time for sports fans, and I absolutely love it. It gives us a lot more to talk about. So one of the reasons it took a while to get this really started is there wasn't a lot to talk about. You know, I wasn't going to start a podcast during the pandemic when there were no sports going on or little sports going on. There's just so much unknown. And so we're getting back into the swing of things. Baseball season starting 162 games. March Madness going in full swing. Definitely an exciting time for sports fans. Let me know what you think, guys. My Instagram is up and running. Just go to Instagram, search Rounding Third Sports. The logo that I have on my podcast is the same logo I have for my Instagram. Drop me a comment on one of the pictures. Drop me a message. If there's something you want to hear me talk about, hear me discuss, hear my thoughts on, leave me a message. Let me know. Say, hey, I want to hear about this topic or that topic. You know, I want to make this show for you guys. So I want this to be things you guys want to hear discussed. And obviously I'll throw in my opinions. I'll throw in my thoughts. But I want to have fun with this and I want to include my listeners. So if you have an opinion, have a thought, let me know, drop me a comment, shoot me a like, check out all that, follow me. And definitely keep listening to me. I appreciate you all. I look forward to next week's episode already. And until then, I will talk to you later.